देवं नरश्च भगवान् ऋषिः मृदु तीव्रं तपो दीर्घम् पाते लोकभावनौ. There in Badrika Ashram, the personality of Godhead in his incarnation as the sages Nara and Narayana has been undergoing great penance since time immemorial for the welfare of all amiable living entities. Badrika Ashrama in the Himalayas, the abode of the Narayan sages, is a great place of pilgrimage for the Hindus. Even up to the present, hundreds and thousands of pious Hindus go to pay respects to the incarnation of Godhead Narayana. It appears that even 5,000 years ago, this holy place was being visited by such a holy being as Uddhava, and even at that time the place was known to be very, very cold. This particular pilgrimage site is very difficult to visit for ordinary men because of its difficult situation in the Himalayas, in a place which is covered by ice almost all year. A few months during the summer season, people can visit this place at great personal inconvenience. There are four dhammas, or kingdoms of God, which represent the planets of the spiritual sky, which consists of the Brahmajyoti and the Vaikunthas. These are Badrika Ashrama, Rameshwara, Jagannath Puri, and Dwarka. Faithful Hindus still visit all these holy places for perfection of spiritual realization, following in the footsteps of devotees like Uddhava. It is true that Badrika Ashram is a very majestic place nestled in the Himalayas, although of course the Himalayas are the greatest mountain range in the world, still Badrika Ashram is within the traveling jurisdiction of human beings. Otherwise, it's very rare to find someone who has gone to the topmost mountains where it's something like 11,000 meters. It's very, very high. Even going to Badrika Ashram, one tends to lose his breath. And of course, if you go farther to Lord Shiva's abode, then you really lose your breath. In fact, it's very hard to walk there. People often, there is a path to go, but many people take a camel ride because it's just very high up, but very, very beautiful. In fact, even someone who is not particularly religious or theistic cannot help but be impressed by the godlike beauty of the Himalayan mountains. And it is certainly a place where, since time immemorial, sages and saints have gone to practice austerity. So, it appears that many things are required to achieve perfection in spiritual life. One's desire to achieve perfection. Without that, there's no question of progress. It is simply, do you want to get free from the cycle of death? Do you want to return to the kingdom of God? Do you want it more than anything else? Tatra lolyam api ekalam mulyam. Practically, you have to be greedy. So desire, one's desire is very, very important. But here, the place where one practices meditation is emphasized. And we can see that, first of all, one has to practice penance to achieve perfection in spiritual life, austerity. We are, since time immemorial, we have been taking one material body after another, and we have developed very strong attachment for the bodily conception. It's not that after we leave one body and get another body that we make some kind of discrimination that, oh, that last body was much better than this one, so therefore I'll take to spiritual life. We have developed a strong attachment for any kind of body we have been given. Even we are in the body of an Indragopa germ, even we're in the body of a tiny germ. To a degree, there is attachment. I don't know how much germs are attached to their bodies, but the principle is there everywhere. So it's very, very strong, and to renounce that attachment takes a tremendous amount of determination, tremendous amount of energy. We know that those who practice Ashtanga Yoga, they leave the body after focusing all their energy on raising the soul up through the different chakras and out the Brahmarandra chakra. So much energy is focused that the body burns up. So much heat, energy and heat. Difficult. It is. Sages and saints have been endeavoring in spiritual life since time immemorial. Sages like Vishwamitra, we cannot imagine his strength, his strength of mind, his strength of body, his patience, his determination. We can't even think of it. And yet, his attempt was interrupted by Menaka. So how difficult it is. Even you try to get out of spiritual life, there are so many obstacles, and they're not just like an obstacle course, some impersonal hurdle that you have to jump over. But there are other living beings who are trying to disturb your spiritual path. Indra often becomes very insecure when someone is becoming very powerful in austerity and meditation. So he has no qualms about sending apsaras or by any means trying to disturb that person's meditation so that they don't challenge his position. So not only impersonal obstacles, but other living beings getting in your way. It is almost like the cards are heavily stacked, if you know that expression. I don't know, all of you are not originally Americans. In playing cards, sometimes a cheater will take the deck of cards beforehand, and it's called stacking the deck, arranging it so that he knows where every card is. And sometimes they put extra aces in there. They have all their tricks, but it seems like in some ways perfection in spiritual life is beyond our grasp. So given that it is a difficult task, we need every help we can get. We need a guide, a person who is experienced in the line. We need many guides who can help us to avoid foolish mistakes and make progress. An intelligent man can learn by hearing about the mistakes of others, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning. What is the utility? We learn about the successes and failures of great devotees in the past, and we can follow in the footsteps of the successful persons. Mahajano yena gatasa pantaha. We can follow the path of the Mahajanas, and we can avoid the pitfalls of our enemies, lust, anger, and greed. We can recognize the enemy. The biggest challenge facing the American retaliatory force in going to Afghanistan is they won't be able to find the enemy amongst the difficult terrain of Afghanistan. All the mountains and caves and hiding places for guerrilla warfare. And they shoot a cruiser, $5 million or $3 million cruise missile, and kill a camel. They've done that. So recognizing the enemy, that we can understand by hearing Bhagavad Gita, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. But one of the more important things, we've already decided that we will attempt to undergo austerity. And for us, just being devotees for a full lifetime, chanting your rounds, taking prasadam, associating only with Vaishnavas, engaging in devotional service, just doing that for 30 or 40 years is tremendous austerity. It's quite enough austerity. Because A, we're pioneers, and B, the whole ocean, the whole river is going in the opposite direction. We're swimming upstream. Everybody around us is preaching a different philosophy, a hedonistic way of life. We were also raised in that environment. So to now go against everything we have learned in our youth, in our childhood, to go against our relatives, our parents, our friends, our schooling, our teachers, our nation, to go against it all and to live a life, a monastic life. Even our householders are sannyasis, or certainly as good as those who are following nicely. Everything is a question of degree. That is austerity. So we're going to practice austerity. And our deities are certainly Narayana and Nara, the perfect human being and the perfect transcendental deity, Rukmini, Dwarkadish. So this is the process, and it is a continual process. It's not a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. We actually have to become devotees in our heart. People talk about techniques to improve the quality of our institutional activities. So if more of us went on Harinam, that would do it. Or if more devotees got back into straight book distribution, that would do it. Or if we have more group meetings and istagostis, that'll do it. And some looking for some technique. But the real thing is in your heart. Do you really want to please Srila Prabhupada? Do you really want to get free from the cycle of birth and death? And are you happy to be a devotee? It started about maybe 20 years ago. I started seeing a phenomenon which is rather bizarre to me, and others like me, maybe few, devotees would have to go to the store to buy some milk, so they would take off their devotional clothing and put on their jeans and a wig and, you know. What's the matter? We should be proud to be followers of Srila Prabhupada. We should be happy to be Vaishnavas. We have the best haircuts. Really. I see so many all over the world, wherever I travel, people are imitating. Everywhere I go, there's lots of bald-headed people now. First of all, the greatest population group in the world that outnumbers all others by far are the baby boomers. And they're all hitting their 50s and 60s, so they're all going bald. And then it's a style amongst young people all over Europe. You find people very short haircut or just shave it all off. So our dress is so nice. The sari is the most beautiful, colorful, in every way, aesthetically beautiful cloth that a woman can wear. And a dhoti and a kurta. It's so simple and cost effective and comfortable. Everything about it. Why should we hide ourselves? You have to come to the point where you want to be a devotee. Not that you're looking for a quick fix technique, how to get the reward. This is not like a game with a rat running on a wheel and giving him a carrot and, you know, watching him run. That's not love of God. Prepared to have a heart. First of all, you have to be prepared to have deep feelings for Krishna. Amiable living entities. Nara Narayan, just as the sages at Naimisharanya practiced austerity, seeing the impending Kali Yuga, seeing the anomalies that were sure to appear in this age, they tried to perform some austerity which would benefit us. But that's the nature of a sadhu. He does not like to see others suffer. Para dukkha dukhi sarve sukino bhavantu. He wants people to be happy. He's not envious of others. He has no war. He's at peace with himself. He's at peace with Krishna, and he's at peace with others. There, unfortunately, they don't have knowledge. I was there before in my own time, but someone blessed me and became my Bhagma Pradarshak Guru and saved me. So I simply want to pass on this favor. If you surf on the, if you play on the internet, you get these letters all the time, you know, saying, here's this very good thing and please pass it on to 100 other people. And I got so many letters during the recent disaster prayers from South Africa and from, you know, outer Slavovia and everywhere. You know, please pass this on to all the people on your mailing list. That's what we want to do. We want to pass this on. Srila Prabhupada and all his gurus, Rukmini Dwarkadish, all of our predecessors, they're so kind to bring us this wonderful, wonderful culture. Not religion, culture. There are different kinds of conversion. There's a religious conversion. We needed that, and we've had it. But there's also a cultural conversion, and that is a little harder for us, it seems. Amiable living entities. Here it is stressed the importance of a place where the mood is ideal for preaching. Now I, without being modest or whatever, arrogant, being arrogant, I must say that I have done some little preaching in my life as a devotee, and my experience leads me to believe that preaching is not so much about going out and catching people and convincing them that you are right and they are wrong. Preaching means going out and attracting people to come back to a community where there is a lot of love and respect and affection between all the devotees. There's a mood of cooperation, helping one another, men helping women, women helping men, younger devotees helping older devotees helping younger devotees. That mood is there, and people come into that environment and they sense it and they say, I want this. This is beautiful. I want this. How can I get this spirit? So, the place, it's, we've got to create in our own hearts and in our relationships with devotees amiable mood. You're going to find when you reach a very difficult place in your life, or when you reach the end of your life, I think you just may find that you don't think, gosh, I wish I could have gone out on Sankirtan more. I wish I could have distributed more prasadam. I wish I could have. I think you're going to find that I wish I could have been closer and more amiable with my god brothers and god sisters and all the Vaishnavas. We see that great devotees like Srila Prabhupada and when they're leaving, they make a point to go around to all their godbrothers and godsisters and acquaintances, whatever, and try to beg forgiveness for any offenses, and try to, because while preaching there may have been some problems. So it's very, very important. And in many ways, we are going to develop with the nucleus that we have right here in this room. We're going to influence the whole world. 6 billion people are going to be influenced by 40 or 50 people. Sound reasonable? Hardly. But it can be done if we have that mood, that spirit in our community, that we go the extra mile to help even a new bhakta become happy in our community. And I would venture to say, and believe me, I think at least there are a few devotees here. I mean, I was distributing books on the street before most of you were even plugged in. Certainly before you joined ISKCON. So I know what that is. And I've been preaching all my life. And I haven't missed many steps. Sometimes I think that it is wrong to be what you think is right when it interferes with the mood of fraternity amongst the few Vaishnavas who are present on this planet. Because we can't build on fear, we can't build on envy, we can't build on hatred. We can only build on what love we have for each other. For what love we have for Prabhupada, for what love we have for Rukmini Dwarkadish. But if we don't like each other, that's Kanishta Adhikari. So, Bhadrikashram is a great place to perform devotional service because so many great personalities are there even today, they say. In fact, it's not mentioned here, but Madhvacharya met Vyasadeva in Bhadrikashram, just north of Bhadrikashram. Our line. And here this Char Dham Yatra, Puri, Dwarka, Rameshwar. Important places. Anyway, I can't contribute much in these days, but some few thoughts I have. Are there any comments anyone would like to make? Josh. No, what's your name?
No.
Huh? Oh, yeah. So, you look like. One thing is, don't look at someone with one eye. It means you're going to fight with them. And I don't want to fight with you. You're too young and too strong for me.
So I was wondering, when you knew devotees alive in the community, you just said, you should have a nice community, you know, be able to see that nice thing, try to have a question. So I was wondering how the new bhakta should be treated, what should be the atmosphere of training they should get in the just beginning. But sometimes I find some temple, they arrive, maybe 2-3 days there, and they just send out all day and go to the distribution. That's nice, but did it arrive and then didn't get any training? I don't know. So many things. What is that?
I'm not sure about that. Oh, the question, yeah. I could hardly hear it, so I can imagine. He says that when new bhaktas come, what type of training should they get? He said that what he has seen is they come, they're here for a couple of days, and then they're sent out preaching. And he says that's good, but, you know, maybe there's more, whatever. And I say that that's the way I was treated. I don't think I got even 2 or 3 days on the first day of it. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. I don't think it, once Giriraj Swami asked Prabhupada, sometimes give a devotee a service that makes him fall down. And it's a heavy question. Why is that? And Prabhupada said it's not the service that makes them fall down, they were already inclined. But I think the way in which we do things, in other words, I know my god brothers, and probably others also, but I know my god brothers, we are ready to go to hell for Srila Prabhupada, because he cared for us. He loved us. And we don't care if we were his cannon fodder or whatever he engaged us in doing, because he knew, he knows in dealing with his disciples when they need a little push and when to loosen the screws. He knows when, because he cares, he watches, he's thinking, he's sensitive. Just like sometimes some people are not so sensitive with other devotees, but with their wives, they're very sensitive, because they don't want to break that relationship. That's important to them. For their sex life, for their children, for so many things that they put value on. But our greatest asset, the greatest thing we have, our greatest asset is our devotees. And if someone doesn't care for our devotees, then I really think there's a problem with such people being in charge of devotees. You can get me to do anything. I'll go out on the first day, I'll go out on the last day. Because he was so kind. Whenever I find problems, and, you know, as a traveling person, I can't stop traveling, I got a disease. I go to so many places, and wherever I find problems, it's based on this, that somebody who's not sensitive to others, somebody who doesn't care, who can't communicate, who can't walk with someone and put his arm around them and tell them, you know, how can I help you do your service? What do you need? Problems in that, gotcha. So, I think it's the way in which we do things that's important. The quality of love that we bring to all our activities. And in that mood, why do people sell Prabhupada's books? Why did Tara sell books? Why did Chandrasekhar, why did Vijay for 20 years, you know, leave the world, or certainly North America in book distribution? Navina Narada. because they loved those books. They saw what was in those books and they loved it. But if there was something external which brought to bear heavy pressure on them, made them begin to wonder whether the books were actually efficacious or not. Here's someone who's been reading the books for 20 years and he's still an ogre, you know, he's still an uncouth person, insensitive, treats me like stool. Then you begin to wonder, maybe these books aren't, you know, I see the Mormons, I see this group, I see that group, they're so kind to their people. Even the faith of the strongest person can be challenged unless we need a nice place which we can call home. What is that house in which the whole world can live? What does that mean? And it's now, it's up to us. And, wherever I go, half the time I'm so weak or sick or in a fog, a brain fog, that I can't contribute anything. But if I just go to a place and I represent a family tradition, I'm still there. And I just be nice to the devotees. That's all they need to become enlivened. They say, oh, we're so enlivened by your visit. And I think, geez, I didn't do sweet nothing. I just, you know, came and ate a little prasadam. I've studied Prabhupada's books. I've been a pujari right here in Los Angeles. I've been a cook, I've been a sankirtan leader. My first service was cleaning the toilets. I've been a president 4 times. Not small temples, Bombay, Calcutta, Hyderabad, Hyderabad. Bombay twice, I tried to get out of it, put me back. I've been a JBC man, the most unwanted position anywhere in the universe. I've studied management, I've done fundraising, very, very successfully raised millions of dollars. And it comes back to the same thing. What we need is the leaders, the old folks. Mr. Bush calls us the folks. He said, where do you get them folks? you know, it's us. We get a second wind. We need a second wind, and we need to get back out, and we need to show everybody, but especially our second generation, that Srila Prabhupada was a kind person who knew perfectly how to deal with people. And that's the Prabhupada we're following. And there's, in management, there is delegation. So I've got a lot of work to do, and therefore I delegate responsibility to others because I can't do it all myself. But there's also something called abdication. In other words, I just hand it off to someone else and then let them do whatever they want because I can't handle it. And if they muck up, well, not my fault. That's abdication. And that never works. Delegation means guided doctor's still watching to make sure. We need to get the result. Let's deal in that way. We need the result. Do we have the result? Do we have a community where everybody's satisfied, everybody's peaceful, everybody's ecstatic about devotional service, more or less everyone respects each other for their abilities, etc.? If we don't have the result, then we ought to think, and where does the buck stop? It stops with us. We've got Srila Prabhupada's mercy. That's the price we pay for getting Srila Prabhupada's mercy. You have to pass it on to everybody on your mailing list. What does that mean to you? And how are you passing it on? To me, he was kind. He was a general, he was a scholar, but his greatest qualification was his compassion, his love, and his kindness. Any other comments?
Last night I was at Dora and called Paige, and I experienced a whole different thing going on in this case. You know, a lot of other people smile at me and it was an identity. But because this bombing incident, even a lady walked past me last night and said evil, you know, like that. And it shocked my heart that people are afraid now of probably anything that's born to them. Do you have any words for us to be able to cope with and deal with these people that now may be afraid of them?
I think, you know, there's a shortage of intelligent compassion amongst some Vaishnavas. I think we missed the boat. I watched the whole ceremony in the Washington Cathedral, and I watched many other ceremonies. The Washington Cathedral, all the presidents were there, and I thought, that's amazing. What a country America is. I can't think, even India, maybe they can compare, but America, all the presidents were there, the whole cabinet was there, all 9 chief justices were there, many senators, opposition leaders, senators, the minority leader, and they had all these, they had Christian preachers, Catholic preachers, Jewish, even they had an Islamic preacher. In the face of what happened, still, you know what they didn't have? There wasn't one Hindu preacher there. And I didn't see any of the condolence meetings. In Canada, in Ottawa, they had 100,000 people turn out for a condolence meeting. No Hindus spoke. I really think it was a time, it was an opportunity. People, they don't care how much you know. They want to know how much you care first. Then they'll listen. Any preacher knows the first thing you do is you develop some kind of friendly relationship. Then you sell them a book or you sell them the Brooklyn Bridge or whatever it is. But first of all, you have to have a friendly relation. And that's what we have to do as a community. We should have been out there offering our services, expressing our grief, and empathizing with people. And para dukkha dukkhi, what does that mean? This is an editorial. There's a time for preaching, and that will follow. But first of all, establish a relationship. My brother sent me this, and I thought it was pretty good. I analyzed it, and it's got edges of mundaneness about it, but still, This is an editorial from the Toronto Globe and Mail, the largest national daily newspaper in Canada. How about you? America, the good neighbor. Widespread, but only partial news coverage was given recently to a remarkable editorial broadcast from Toronto by Gordon Sinclair, Canadian television commentator. What follows?